Welcome to The Backlog, the show where we make good on Steam sale promises. I'm Calix.
I'm Sasha.
I'm Christian.
And this week's game is The Banner Saga. Please note that we will be getting into major spoiler territory in our deep dive, so if you don't want to get spoiled for the game, you should probably put this episode aside for a while. But if you finish the game, or you don't mind spoilers, settle in. Banner Saga, just as a quick overview, it's a turn-based tactics combat game. Which combines with a heavy narrative experience as interactive fiction with a sort of resource management layer. I hear we all finished it.
We did.
Yep.
It's exciting.
I finished it last night.
Nice.
At like 3 in the morning.
So we got you fresh.
Yeah. I'm still upset.
Fresh emotion.
I actually finished it and I watched an LP, so I feel...
Whoa.
I know. I'm very extremely impressive. Great. I had started playing this game before, so this is my second attempt at the Banner Saga, and I finally made it through. And it had a little pratfalling to get started, because I started off halfway through the game, and I was like, no, I should start over. And then yeah. I did that, and then I ended up halfway through the game, and I was like, I'll continue. This is fine. So despite the intense amount of Banner Saga I have played, I might not have seen everything, because I don't know what order stuff happens in.
Also, I'm sure there's a difference by the people who survive your playthrough, right?
To a certain extent. I don't think that changes too much. Mm-hmm. There's only a couple permadeaths that I'm aware of. All right, let's go into what did we know about it going in? What was your experience of meeting this game?
Just from what you guys told me, it was kind of the end of the world. We're trying to survive. There's no gods. There's giants. There's humans. That's all I knew. And then it was going to be sad.
That's yes, all. Yeah. That's literally the only part I knew about it was that it was some kind of high fantasy, and that it was very sad all the time, and only got sadder. Which is accurate. Mm-hmm. Which is accurate.
Yeah. I had played up to the bridge before, the Varl landmark, and so I was at the point of needing to go into the Great Hall and tell them, like, hey, break the bridge or don't, or just do a thing. And I was like, I don't remember how to play this game at all. Oh my god, what is happening? Yeah. So I'm going to start over. And when I did start over, I played on normal difficulty until a few playthroughs later, when I accidentally turned it on and found myself at the Great Hall again. I was like, well, that's not contiguous.
No.
But I'm running out of time, so I switched it to easy.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah, I recognized the normal playthrough, having to rest to get your warriors back up from injured, mm-hmm. would be helpful. Well, not helpful, but like a cool way of telling that particular story, of interacting with the game, but also... I'm a big weenie, and I'm really bad at those fights, so having the fights be difficult and also my warriors constantly injured because I kept losing, I wasn't in love with the story and world enough to tolerate it, so I just flipped it to easy.
Yeah, it just felt very defeating, but I wasn't gonna flip it to easy until I knew that you guys had done it. So, yeah, after it was on easy, it was so much better, and I felt like I was a real warrior. And it was nice that they weren't injured, because you just felt punished for trying your best.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So then when they fell, I was like, oh, it's okay. They're fine.
Yeah, I thought initially that if they fell in battle, they would just be dead. And I'm happy to report that is not the case.
Yeah, I was worried about that. I was like, oh, no, I like that guy. Oh, he's back. Okay.
Yeah.
There are permadeath situations.
Yes.
You encountered some?
I encountered many. When you're on the Varl group section, one of them is like, hey, well, one of them starts as like, man, I wish the other guy was in charge, and you'd sort of walk past, and his friend is like, I bet that guy wouldn't love to hear you say that, and he gets all embarrassed. And the next day he's like, hey, I'm gonna prove myself, be your friend and in combat buddy. And you're like, yeah, okay. Or I was anyway. I was like, yeah, okay, you know, prove yourself, keep up the pace, should be fine. And then he was on my team, and he was a really good fighter, and I really enjoyed it. And then in one of those story beats, where you're picking between a bunch of choices to deal with a problem, one of the sledge had pulled a cart off of a cliff, and that character, which I didn't know at the time because I forgot what his name was, it was just like a set group of letters with a bunch of M's in it. And the choices were to try and knock off the sledge, or try and grab the supplies or the person. I was like, hey, if I knock off the sledge, then we can get the thing under control. He's not, like, shaking the thing. That is not the case. The thing, everything fell into the canyon and died.
Oh.
And I lost both the supplies and the person. And then I got back into the combat, and I was like, wait, where did my buddy go? So that was one. And then another one happened at the bridge. I decided to defend it. I was going to do the time and try to talk the Varl into letting us destroy it. I was helping haul bodies off of the bridge, and my shield buddy, who had been with the blonde kid from the start,
yeah,
got hit, and I think fell off the bridge.
Yeah, I think that's the last time he's capable of dying. Because I made it past that, and I got an achievement.
God damn it.
But that guy survives. Because he can't die in Act 2.
Oh.
He can only die in Act 1.
Huh.
He can die a lot of ways in Act 1.
Is his name like Ivan or
yeah.
something?
Yeah. Or Eirik or something. No, I tried writing down some of these names. Mm. Eirik? No.
They're just hard to remember.
They all sound just, right.
You never hear these names.
Yeah. One of them has two names. Ivar. Ivar's the big guy.
Yeah.
He's the big hero.
Ivar is the only one who has a scripted loss.
Really? Oh, that's right. Wait, I didn't lose mine, though.
His arm
just his arm just gets cut off.
Yeah, that happens no matter what.
Oh, okay.
If you win or lose.
Oh, I didn't know you could win that fight. I guess you could, if you knew how to play the game.
Well, I don't know that you can win. I just mean that that's the outcome of that encounter. Mm. And I heard that you had some permadeaths.
You know what? I don't even remember the deaths before the last one. I don't know why that is, but I got so upset, and maybe that's why I don't remember exactly who it was.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It was
some,
like,
people died.
Yeah. The other notable thing that happened was, you know the town when you're the human guy? Like, right at the beginning? Rook, yeah. And you go to the town, and it's in kind of a weird place where it's under siege or something. The governor is gone or in hiding.
Oh, yeah.
And I decided to make a temporary alliance with this dude. And it turns out he betrays me. And then I steal a bunch of food from him. And his second in command is like, hey, I don't actually like him. I'll come join up with you. This was my mistake because I didn't have the forethought to think about it. But I took all of their food before leaving. And so that they followed me across the wastes and was like, hey, you're the one with all our food. You literally forced us out of that place because we don't have the capability of staying there anymore. So, listen, we're not above begging. We can be your prisoners or whatever. Just, like, let us come with you. And the option there was either to... Like, I wanted to kill them. Alette did not. Alette was like, that's not who we are, Dad. Come on. And I'm like, all right, Alette, for you. And so I just took them as prisoners, and then later, much, much later, I almost completely forgotten that they were even under the banner, and, the second-in-command was like, hey, so I wanted to talk to you in private about, I feel like your leadership is maybe under question here, and then you're like, no, all the people I know, like, listen to me, are cool. And he's like, well, you know, that's just a preamble for stabbing you in the stomach, and then he does that, and tries to, like, do a coup with, like, his men.
Good lord.
Yeah. And after that, like...
That's a lot of stuff I did not experience.
No, that didn't happen either.
That's because I make bad decisions. You make bad decisions, you see more of the story. So that went poorly. We ended up on top of that. And we didn't actually lose anyone, which is good. But, like, the archer, the one in blue and white, the chieftain's wife.
Yeah.
Or widow, I guess.
Oddleaf or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Oddleaf. She got stabbed. She pulled through, but... Alette had to kill a dude. Because she got dragged off in the skirmish and had to kill him in self-defense. And she was very upset.
Oh, no, I broke that. I broke that one early.
I
was like, sorry, Alette, things are gonna happen. I need you to shoot people.
Okay, here's a question. Did you ever find archers other than Rook useful in battle?
Yeah.
Alette was useful.
Alette.
Really?
Oddleaf wasn't. She was Alette. So weak. I don't know what that was all about.
Only Alette is useful, but...
Like, only Rook ever was useful to me, because you could hit him. And, like, all the hits that she could do were, like, 1 or 2 points, which is useless.
Yeah.
And she could be killed in, like, 2 or 3 hits. So, and once she started getting hit, then people would, like, crowd on her, so...
Yeah.
Eventually I got an item that gave her more willpower, so then she was more useful, but you just had to not let her get too close.
Let's talk about the mechanics of the game. This is a relatively straightforward tactics game. That just means that you're moving along tiles and you have all that stuff for combat. The biggest disruptions there are the two characters' sizes, the one tile or four tiles, and then you have a guaranteed opposite turn order that each side will go every other turn. How did you feel about those mechanics?
It took me a minute to master. I was really grateful for the training rounds because I could just, like, go and practice stuff and actually get to know how each character's moves worked in combat. So that was super helpful. After a while, I really enjoyed them, to be honest. Like, they're good. Winning a fight is fun. Barely surviving a fight is fun. I liked choosing whether or not I wanted to continue the fight. Right? Like, take another wave.
Yeah, those were probably the most interesting choices to me. Mm-hmm. Or, can I take another round of that? The endurance stuff of, like, a large-scale battle was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Did y'all get any use out of the, like, items?
The things that they could equip?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mostly with...
Maybe. Hard to tell.
With Alette, because, you know, she was such a weakling that she needed some help.
Yeah.
I ended up giving Alette the +2 strength and also knockback on hits above 3.
That's pretty good.
It's all right. I feel like there's a lot of interconnectivity in this game that doesn't ever get a chance to pay off.
Mm.
I probably used Rook's Mark Prey ability 2 or 3 times throughout the entire game. Because if there's a guy that I want to hit that way, I probably already had people attacking him to begin with. Mm-hmm. By the time Rook gets there, he's down to 2 health. Or if there's a guy that I want to hit that way, nobody's in position to do it.
Yeah. Or they're so far out that it'll take 2 turns to even get over there and land the hit. Because that move is, you have to do it when you're right next to them. So
that's why I never used it. Because, like, the big ones, well, they can't move that far, which is kind of a plus. So you want them to be kind of far out to be able to get to him before they can hit him. So.
Yeah. And then the Mender's Arc Lightning ability is pretty useful, but also you still only hit diagonally. That means that it does not take the shape you think it will.
Mm-hmm.
Very frustrating.
I regret losing, because probably the only archer other than Rook that has any merit in the game is the Red Witch.
The who?
The Red Witch? What?
The who?
What game are you playing?
You know the asshole human prince?
Yeah.
His companion.
Luden.
He has 2 companions. One of them is a Varl, who's not very talkative. And the other is this woman.
Remember her.
Who's all in red, who everyone refers to as the witch. If you go and talk to her, she's like, I don't talk. And you're like, but you're talking now. And she's like, yeah, isn't that the joke? She's fine.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Remember that.
But you can add her to the, you can use her. She's cool. What? She has a attack where she throws pitch onto that tile in like a plus.
Oh, shape, yeah.
And then
okay.
Lights it on fire.
Because right, no, I kept I getting stuck about. In the
Yeah. It was super useful and it changed the landscape of the battle in a way that's interesting and that I like.
Yeah. I remember training with her, but I don't remember actually taking her into battle.
You might have just avoided her forever. She could have been your friend.
Yeah, if you kick Luden out of the group.
I believe I kicked him out. He was so annoying.
Yeah, I don't even know why I kicked him out.
Kicked him out when?
They met up with another group of Varl, and they were talking about, I think, something about geography, being like, oh, this place is on fire, or this place isn't on fire yet. And the person in charge at that point, you, was like, you should go there, actually, Luden, because you're a prince, and that's important to people. And Luden's like, no, I want to be here, I want to see this through to the end, right? Like, there's no point in this. And then he gets rude, and so I slapped him, and so he had to leave.
I think I slapped him, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember this at all.
It's pretty
satisfying. Baby.
Mm. Little baby Luden.
Trying to do fights.
I liked the storytelling in this game in general.
Mm-hmm.
There are some parts that were weaker than others, but I did feel like there was a sense of journey. There was a sense of a world beyond yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that's not mechanically represented in any way. It still felt like there would be things to find around the corner.
Well, I mean, every godstone, right? And every little encounter that you had on the road.
Yeah.
Those, I think, do have mechanical merit because they contribute to your morale, right? If you do really well on one of those, you can get a boost of morale. And if it sucks, then morale will go down. One of the things that I really liked about them were that, for instance, like, strangers that come to you on the road are pretty reliably equally likely to be either just people running from the dredge or, like, bandits. And you don't know.
Yeah.
And accepting someone into the group is always a risk. Like, I got robbed a couple of times.
Same. I came across some bandits, and they're like, hold on. They stole food from us. We're here to take it back. You have some of it. Stay out of this battle. And I was like, well, I actually need renown right now, so hold on.
Oh, there's a question. Actually, did you guys side with the twins at the beginning? The two blonde boys?
I don't remember. I had the twins in my party.
Me too.
Do you not get them if you don't side with them?
I don't know. I feel like if you don't side with them, then you just fight them and get somebody else. Yeah.
I stopped using them, though. I don't use them.
Really? I use them all the way to the end.
Their special abilities is pretty nice.
Yeah. I didn't like it. Forget them.
I also liked the, like, day-to-day drama you deal with, because you realize you're traveling with so many people, and then you're just gonna have, like, petty drama, like, between the mothers, like, she just doesn't like my child, and then, like, trying to calm them down, and then it's like, I am a good leader. So that was nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, like, the guy that got really drunk, did you guys...
Well, yeah.
And you're like, how do I deal with this person?
How did you deal with him?
I don't know. I don't remember. I didn't, like, punish the guy. I think I either talked to him, or told people to keep an eye on him, or don't give him any more, and it was fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that didn't end well for me at all.
How did it end for you?
So, I tolerated him as best as I could. I was like, okay, this guy does not get to drink anymore. And then, of course, he shows up drunk again. And I think he ends up setting a tent on fire and putting people in actual danger and, like, losing rations. And everyone's mad at him. So I'm like, okay, here's some rations. Here's a knife. Go live somewhere else. And he was very sad, but...
I let the crowd beat him up the first night, and then he stopped making trouble.
Oh, well. Maybe I should have done that.
Yeah. I was just like, yeah, no, you're done. You guys feel free to deal with this how you like. We're leaving. Come along as you will. One of the nice things, this little detail, is that, at least I'm pretty sure, because I didn't notice it initially, is that your character list, the arrangement, is how the order in which they walk in the caravan.
That's cool.
Wait, how would you know the order they walk in the caravan?
You can zoom in.
What?
You can zoom in?
They're at the front.
Good. The whole time?
I didn't know you could zoom
they
in.
They were far away, and I was just like, there we go, the little tiny people.
Yeah, you can zoom in. You can't zoom in that far, but like you can zoom in like enough to be like, oh yeah, there's the character in white, followed by the character in green, who's taller. And yeah, that's my crew. I know them.
All right. Just watching from afar the whole time.
Just little tiny specks. Which was cool, to be honest, but I would have liked to zoom in. That would have been cool.
I guess. There's nothing to see.
Good animation. The animation in this game is good.
Yeah.
The weird ambient movements. I don't know that they worked for me all the time when people are just standing there and talking. Mm. But the art style is really pretty. I really, really, really liked all of the godstones. There was a cool moment between the wastes and the bridge. I just ran out of supplies because I tried to stay in the town to meet up with the menders.
Yeah.
Person.
I stayed there a long time.
I stayed there a long time.
How long did you wait?
Paid for it.
I don't think I ever ran out of supplies.
Okay, then you probably didn't stay.
I stayed till I ran out of supplies, and then I would buy half a day's worth of supplies and then stay for another day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then buy half a day's worth of supplies and save for another day. And I did that until I was really low on renown. I just couldn't afford it anymore. And I was like, ah, no.
One of the things that happened on the road that I really liked was I was very, very low morale because I had no supplies. And the Varl had a drinking game. They were like, this is something that we do when these times happen. Because they happen. Because they live for hundreds of years and life sucks.
you know how life sucks when you live for 100 years? Yeah.
Imagine that, but more, where they just sort of went around and said the worst thing they could think of and tried to top each other. And I joined in, and it boosted morale, and that felt good.
Yeah.
I think I told them that it would make it worse.
Yeah.
It's a fun game. Yeah. I think that I like the way it makes you think about your choices on different scales. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it pays off all the time, but I think that the emotion that it sets, the tone that it sets... does pay off, does work.
Yeah. I wish that the characters had been different. I think this is the fault of the setting that it's in, where everything is so desperate all the time, and everyone is so focused on surviving and fighting the dredge and finding a place where they can be safe and the people that they're with can be safe. In that, aside from a couple of standouts, like the traitor and his brother, or like Luden, or whatever his name is, or the Masterminder, whose name is...
Juno,
yeah. And Alette, to be honest. Alette and Oddleaf. God, I wish they were useful at all. But, like, most of the Varl are these tough, very practical-minded and battle-ready people.
Mm-hmm. Although I really enjoyed meeting one by... he's stumbling drunk into the town hall. I save him, and he's like, what are you talking about? I saved us.
Was that... Oh, no! I left that person.
And then you left... You didn't save him?
No, I tried to lure the dredge away.
Oh.
And deal with them and then come back to the hall, but I guess it didn't happen.
Yeah, no, I just followed him in there, and then we fought off the dredge, and then I looked around, there's all these, like, civilians, and he's like, why'd you lead them here? And I was like, what are you talking about? It worked. I was like, you're drunk. And he's like, what are you talking about? It worked. And then he's like, oh, okay, actually, I was sent here on a mission to get mead, and, I drank a lot of it. I'll give you the rest if you agree that none of this happened. Mm. And so we go back to the town with the ravens or whatever, the docks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We get there and he's like, hey, you're back. Where's that mead? And he's like, that's a great question. He's like, oh my God.
Okay, he's cool. This guy.
And then a week later, or 2 weeks later, like, we're holding the wall, and I'm like, all right, I need to do this thing. I was like, well, we would love to help you, but, like, I can't get these people to move without that mead. Like, we would have been in a much better place. And, well, I've got some mead. It's like, hold on. So you came here with this guy who doesn't know where the mead is, and you happen to have mead.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Fine. All right, hand it over. We'll take care of this now. I liked being able to have these little character moments in camp.
Yeah, those were good.
Actually, talking about the training mode, I wish that it had not been diegetic. Mm-hmm. Diegetic means that it's represented in the game world. Training happens in your training tent, which happens when you set up camp. Which means that if you get a new character in a story moment, you have to make it back to camp before you can train.
That's true.
Which means that I almost never trained, because when I needed it was before I ended up in a battle with this new character I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the good part was that you could always click on them to see what they could do. Yeah. So that was always very helpful.
Yeah.
Because I would always forget what people's abilities and stuff were.
I felt like the abilities were much more rarely useful than I wanted.
There were a couple that I used pretty regularly. Like, the, like, shield stomp was really good for stripping armor off really big guys. Because mm-hmm. otherwise you're chipping away at their armor for however many turns and still getting really, really damaged. I found the twin brothers hatchet thing was super useful.
There are better ways to get that armor down.
I'm curious as to what your methods were.
My thing would be I would start off with Alette and the Mender to try to get them into a position of using the piercing or thread the needle. Because that was a really good one for doing armor damage to a lot of things.
Huh.
You have to get them in a row, so that was difficult to do.
That was hard. That's why I was like, oh, I could never use it because they were never standing right next to each other.
Yeah.
I always thought the Mender did most of his damage to health and not to armor. That was always my experience.
No, that was what Alette was for, is to do damage to armor.
Oh, I see.
And then the Mender would do damage to health. And then I would have probably two of my giants stomp over and take up space. Honestly, I think one of the most effective aspects of gameplay, of tactical strategy in this game, is character placement.
Yeah.
And it matters so much that it makes everything else feel kind of impotent. If you set up your giants in a certain way, then they can never reach your other characters. You get characters stuck on each other, like they can't move through each other. Only Rook can.
Mm-hmm.
Rook and one other character, I think, who can just walk through allies. It can be really easy to get people stuck.
Fortunately, Rook rarely needs to walk through allies because he can just shoot from a distance and it does the same damage.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that she could position them until more than halfway through the game. Yeah. Like, yeah. Because, you know, it asks, are you ready? And well, there's nothing I can do, so yeah, I'm ready to fight.
You know? Mm-hmm. Figure it out. Rook is so overpowered.
Oh my God, yeah.
He should have died.
Do you want to talk about the ending?
I feel like I'm ready to talk about the ending.
You should talk about it.
Okay, so I had heard, listening to podcasts about video games, this spoken about in very non-spoilery terms.
Reminder, this is a spoiler cast.
Yes, this is extremely a spoiler cast. The way it was phrased there was that Alette would ask her father to have responsibility for herself, to, like, have a chance to make her own choices, right? In this particular way to get some of her own glory. And that making that decision changed what happened in the game from that point forward. I was like, okay, that's probably, like, a really emotional, like, if you give her independence, then you'll never see her again, because she'll go out and do her own thing. No, if you let her do the thing, she dies. She gets her tiny little spine crushed, and then, oh, there's nothing we can do for her, because we're menders, and we can handle basic medic things, but not getting squished, I guess.
You know, the reason why you let her do it wasn't the reason I let her do it. Because you only had one shot, and she was making the point that I'm the better shot. And I was like, well, she has a point there. So if it's guaranteed that she's not going to miss, then maybe she should just do it, and then it'll ensure the victory.
You know, the only person who's guaranteed that they're not going to miss is the red archer.
Yeah.
Her bird of prey ability that lets you attack, like, two or three spaces further, that is a guaranteed hit. And it's the only one that is a guaranteed hit.
There are also, I mean, there are items that you can use. They're really, really high rank. They're, like, rank 5 minimum. But they're, like, can't be deflected.
Yeah.
Whatever this person does can't be deflected.
Did you get anybody up to rank 5?
Oh my god, buddy, outside, please. Yeah, I got Rook, a couple other people.
I find it unfortunate that you stop being able to level before you run out of things to level up.
That, like, you can't max out all the stats.
Yeah, and I understand, but also, why?
But also the mender comes to you basically fully leveled.
He was rank 5.
Level everybody up.
I did my best. I tried to. I found that really important because it meant they did more damage in battle. I didn't get everybody up there. I did my best. It's also, I suspect, a reason that we ran out of supplies. I was spending renown on that instead of food.
I also lost a let. I'm upset about it because it's not mechanically justified.
Yeah.
As soon as you kill Bellower, I had a full line between Alette and Bellower.
Mm.
And he just goes, that doesn't matter. I'm going to walk through a cutscene. And now she's dead. I was like, what?
Another thing is that this game autosaves. So you can't go back and be like, okay, but what happens when... You saw a playthrough, right? Like, so what happens if you pick Rook instead?
Or I haven't seen it to the end. As far as I know, Alette just takes over.
Hooray, Alette.
Which I think is the more narratively satisfying thing.
Why? Because then there would be no leader anymore?
Alette has a clear arc of trying to assert herself and being protected by the world, by Rook, by Eric, or whoever goes back to help her early on. And Rook's thing is, this is hard.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this? This is hard. And I don't see how... I mean, it's not the tightest narrative loop to begin with, but I can see how pushing Alette into a world without Rook makes that question of what is she doing and what is it all for and what matters and what doesn't a lot more immediate to her. But I don't see how losing Alette improves Rook's story. What is the challenge that he wasn't going through yet because she was still around?
Yeah, and the thing that would be good about Alette taking over again is one of the things that I really liked about Rook and Yver early in the game is that someone asks, hey, are you the leader of this clan now? And he's like, I guess. And at one point, Yver is like, I sure hope you know what you're doing. And Rook's is like, we're making it up as we go. And like, that's a known thing between the two of them. Is
yeah.
That like, yeah, Yver has been around for hundreds of years, but he's been making it up this entire time. He doesn't know what he's doing. And neither does anyone else in this world. We're just doing our best to get by. Which is reflected really well in all of those different choices that you get. Right? Like, none of them... Well, a couple of them are clearer than others, but a lot of them are really murky as to what the right choice is. The entire rest of the game is reinforcing that. I don't feel like losing Alette is something that needs to drive that home, because it's already been driven home through the entire rest of the game.
Exactly. It's redundant at that point. If you were to play Banner Saga 2, would you go into it with Alette or Rook?
Probably Alette, because I'm tired of Rook. Rook is a handy blank slate, but I don't feel like Rook has a character.
He's so powerful, though.
I feel... Yeah, but I...
Yeah, you don't need it.
Yeah, you don't need it. Just get a bunch of cool Varl around, and then you're good.
Yeah. So I know he's motivated to protect Rook, but, like, what else is he motivated to do? I don't know. Speaking of Yver, who I've been calling him Ivor, I don't know what to say.
Oh, that's fine.
I think it's Yver. I think that's correct from something that I read, but...
So, can we just, like, talk about his story really quick? Because, you know, everybody respects him, and they're just like, oh, he's, like, this legend, and then you finally find out it's because he killed a... What did he kill?
He killed a kid and its nursing mother.
Yeah, so so you find out that there are female dredge, and that they can actually reproduce and, like, have children, and they're like...
Mm-hmm.
I was like, whoa.
They're like people, yeah, as it turns out.
Because they find a baby, and so you're like... This is terrible. But then they're, like, killing everybody at the same time. Like, what did you guys think about that discovery?
What did you do with the baby?
I left it.
I kept it. I was like, here. I found a mom, and she was like, okay, I guess.
I put it to a vote, and they voted to leave it.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yes, the vote, and then left it. And I was like, great.
Yeah, I'm good with it. Yeah. That I do like that his story goes to be this legend that doesn't want to talk about it and left. Mm. You know, you don't really get a lot of context early on for why you're switching between a group with Varl to a group with fewer Varl. Mm. To know that it's a lot fewer Varl, it's just him, basically, because he's sort of outcast.
Well, self-imposed, right?
Yeah, he's exiled himself.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the tragedy of his victory.
Yeah. There,
especially since the thing that he killed is unkillable. It makes sense that it would still be this important event, even if some people knew that that's why. They'd be like, yeah, but you did it.
I didn't really feel that way because she didn't try to defend herself because she
that's
was
also
so
why he doesn't feel that way.
Heartbroken. Yeah. Like, his mother just lost her baby, so she's just like, there's no reason to live, and that's why he could kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eva agrees with you.
Yeah. It was also interesting, the conversation with the Great Serpent, being like, this is supposed to be my apocalypse. This is my time to shine. Why is there a darkness coming?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What have you done wrong? Also, why can't I eat you?
Yeah.
I don't know why I can't eat me.
I have a soft spot for giant serpents, so it's fine.
That whole serpent thing and that other, like, unfolding of the end of the world and stuff, I didn't like it. Cause
really?
I don't know. It was just like, you know what? We're dealing with this right now. We're dealing with the dredge. Like, I don't need this right now. I have enough to worry about. It's interesting, but at the same time, I was like, oh, there's more evil things?
Well, I think it's made a little bit more difficult because it doesn't pay off in this game.
Yeah, true.
It's for the sequel. In fact, they just announced Banner Saga 3. So all that stuff continues, I guess.
Will that be the last game, do you think?
The wording that they've used has implied as much.
It's cool that it's going to continue into the second one. That's fine, because after I thought about it, and I was like, okay, that's for the next one. It's cool. Yeah. But for the first one, I was like, yeah, I can only handle so much doom.
Yeah.
I mean, the Serpent's intro was intense. I was amazed. It was very cool.
With it just sort of appearing in the background?
Well, yeah, with the, first of all, like, you don't see it at first, the mountains start to crack in half and, like, fall apart. And the camera's always very, very far back, so you always have this incredibly beautiful, big, big vista, and your tiny, tiny people going across the screen. Watching these huge mountains, like, crumble into parts, and then you see the spine of the serpent, like, arcing through one of the fissures, which is really, really cool.
I liked it when it was smaller. Is all the conflicts when they're more personal.
Yeah.
I like the feeling that it evokes of there's this major conflict.
Yeah, I like the serpent more as a backdrop, for sure.
Yeah, like actually having the conversation with it. I don't know that I enjoyed as much. What do you think about the large-scale battles, which are talking about like formation and what have you?
I never did anything but charge in, so I don't know.
Same. I don't know what else you can do.
And I did formations, but it's the same thing, right?
I don't know.
Is it? Just go into the battle thing? And...
Yeah.
It was unclear, and so I didn't feel comfortable making a new decision. I was like, well, the last one sent my guys in, and then we fought a bit, and that was cool, but I didn't know how else to handle it.
Yeah, and I never felt like I was in a position where I could take a loss to experiment. Like,
yeah.
If this goes badly, then my entire clan is going to die, or whatever. So I need to do the winning thing that's worked so far, which is to charge in and handle it myself. Which I think actually describes my playthrough. I don't think I ever left anything to a vote. Like, for instance, when the daughter dies of the two squabbling mothers, and one of them was like, she killed my kid. I was like, okay, we'll send a medic to examine to figure this out. And it turns out the daughter was sick for a long time and just died from that, and the mother knew that, was just trying to get rid of the other lady. But, like, reliably, I was like, okay, I'll make a choice here. Like, with the baby, with the drunk.
I did not find it surprising that the dredge are just running from something else. Mm. I appreciate that. I wish that it mattered somewhere. No one makes a different choice because of that.
It sort of hinted at their personhood. Because when you're fighting them, it seems like a faceless wave of evil, right? You're just taking down these things in armor. But literally the first shot of being with Rook and Alette is being behind this tree and watching this dredge carrying a dead deer over its shoulder. And it's holding an arrow in its other hand, so my immediate thought was like, okay, well, maybe it's just picking up this thing and trying to find the person who killed it. Maybe that's just an action that it's taking out of instinct or something. But knowing that they reproduce, they have kids they nurse and raise, equally as likely they eat, that they cook, that they, you know.
Yeah. I didn't realize that until the very end.
Yeah, I mean,
like, oh. But even though they are running from something, I didn't appreciate that, because it's like, okay, so your lives are in danger, so your solution is to kill everybody else? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. The other thing that I totally forgot was that the sun stopped moving.
That's right.
That's like the first thing they tell you in this game, and I forgot about it for most of it.
Yeah.
And that makes sense as far as, like, what the darkness is. Well, it's the other side of the planet, where the sun no longer goes.
Oh, yeah, because if you have sun all the time in one place.
Exactly, like...
That's assuming Banner Saga happens on a round planet.
Yeah. That is the assumption.
The same.
Because there doesn't seem to be any other effect to the fact that the planet is no longer spinning at the same speed it was.
Assuming it's a planet.
Assuming it's a planet, assuming it spins.
Well, is it not spinning?
We don't know. Okay. It's a fantasy world.
All we know is that there's a sun in the sky, and it isn't going anywhere.
So. It's got a serpent that thinks that this darkness shouldn't be happening.
And all the gods are dead, so there's no one to ask.
Are they? Or are they like Bellower and just going to be real mad when they wake up?
God, so good. I love that so much. It's like, wait a second, I can't die. Damn it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to believe that they're just dead, gone, all of them. Like, they're gods. They're not supposed to die. Can they die?
It's never described how they die. You go to the things and sometimes you'll find cool stuff there or do rituals to honor the gods or leave stuff there. And you'll learn who they were when they were alive, when they were active in this world, but you never learn how they died.
Yeah. I just think that they're inactive. Because it's kind of human to be like, well, they're not here, so they must be dead. Maybe they're not.
Maybe they've got a different saga to watch.
Deity Impermanence.
A banner-free saga.
It's the version of the game you get if you back us on Patreon. No ads.
No. Oh, God. What was I going to say?
Something about gods. Probably.
No, what I was going to ask is, how did you feel about the many, many different storytelling styles? There are a lot of layers to this game. There's full-on cutscenes with voice acting and all that stuff. There's still cutscenes, but now it's just text. Mm. There's interactions that are no longer cutscenes, but the text is still there. And then there's interactions that are just a little scroll that comes up and you can pick from a thing. And then there's the interactions in, like, a conversation, and then there's interactions on the world map, and then there's interactions in the town map. What did you think about how uneven all that is, to have different solutions for all of these?
I really like the combination of visual novel and another kind of game. Mm-hmm. Like, I really like that we bounce between these combat encounters and then this light resource management, and back to these extremely visual novel, like, text at the bottom, two character portraits talking in the top. And I think that using that format for conversation specifically is a strong choice because you know what the other person looks like. You're talking to them specifically. I think that abstracting that down to just text for the like small encounters along the road was smart. It reminds me of what was the isometric RPG we played very little of recently? Pillars of Divinity?
Pillars of Eternity?
Yeah, they had moments of those that are echoed from tabletop Dungeons & Dragons, where, like, you reach a specific point in the game where, say, you need to get through this door and it's locked. You could try to break it down, you could try to pick the lock, and instead of giving you prompts that you can use the mechanics of the game to do, it gives you text options. So, instead of pressing E to break the door or whatever, you have option 1, break the door, option 2, pick the lock, etc., etc., which is echoing the way that it works at the table, right? If you're playing this game as a Dungeons & Dragons game, you have a GM, you're one of the players, then the GM is going to say, here's the door, it is locked, how do you get through it? And then you're like, I'm going to do this, and then they'll either come up with a narrative way to talk you through that, or they'll say, give me a skill check, like, how strong are you?
Yeah, and figure it out from there. FTL does a similar thing. Mm. Just having these little snippets that describe a situation, what do you do about it? I think Banner Saga was a bit more successful with those, making them feel like they had an answer and it weren't just random things.
I think also the strength of taking those decisions out of the mechanics of the game, instead of, this isn't actually the question you asked, but I'm happy that they separated those choices out from the RTS, not RTS, but turn-based strategy. because in combat, you're always looking for the optimal choice, right? You want to look for the thing that's going to make the most damage, that's going to use the least amount of energy,
yeah,
and get you hurt the least. But there's no way to game these problems, which is what helps make them so murky and always so tenuous to navigate when you decide to make a choice, right? Like, any one of these could work, and one of these could be a disaster. I think that separating those out from any way of telling, other than your own mind, which of these is morally or practically correct, I think is the strength of those encounters.
Yeah, I like the different styles. The only thing that threw me off was that every once in a while, whoever was narrating would, you know, jump in. Oh, it's been a long 2 weeks. I'm like, where have you been this whole time?
Who's this guy?
I mean, I appreciate it was cool, but it wasn't very consistent, so yeah. It was just kind of weird.
It was a good choice for such a small team. This was made by a tiny indie studio using Kickstarter, and I think they did a really good choice in doing it this way.
It feels very, very big. It feels like a very big game.
Yeah.
Even though, now that we're talking about it, I recognize it's really a couple of parts very smartly put together.
Emotionally, it's
a game. Did y'all ever use the map for anything?
No.
Except for when the first huge objective was like to get to Grofheim, I think it was called. I was like, okay, how far are we from this place? But that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I checked it every so often when I was out of supply, so I was like, okay, when's the next time I can resupply? But it's not like you can use it tactically. You can't be like, okay, well, let's cut through this area.
Yeah, you don't get to make a choice at any point, so.
And none of that information matters. It's just cool flavor text. Which is cool for people who like to read flavor text.
So yeah.
If you get really into the mythos of this game, I can see reaping a lot of rewards from doing that reading and exploring that.
Yeah, what was your least favorite part of the game?
The visual of talking to someone. When they would flip the camera, sucked. I hate it. I'm pretty sure this is just a personal taste thing, but I don't like the choices they made for what should move for each character. And I think part of that is just incongruity of it. It wasn't cohesive. Like, for instance, the big old Varl has these two
little strands
on his chest, yeah, that just sort of move around as if he's moving around or as if the wind is moving them around, but nothing else of that same weight and texture. Like, his hair doesn't move in concert if there was wind going,
yeah.
And he doesn't move as if he's breathing, as if that would move the strings around, and so it just, like, has these two things dangling and dancing in front of you while you're trying to have a conversation.
And then with the twins, the same parts for both of them move.
Yeah.
So it's like they're the same person. They look exactly the same.
Yeah.
You're like, no, they don't.
One of them has a cool scarf. I had a conversation with that guy for some reason. He was like, they were arguing about, basically, the one with the scar likes to have sex, and the other one was like, hey, that's bad, or whatever. They were having a conversation about that, and I came by and interrupted, and the other guy left, and he's like, listen, I like this life, I like fucking, it's all good. And I'm like, well, this was a constructive conversation, I guess.
Carry on with whatever it is you're up to, because I don't care.
Yeah. The thing that bothered me was during combat, sometimes the stuff in the lower left-hand corner would get in the way of me clicking on what I was going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I was going to fight somebody and you have to move the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it interrupted my zone.
I wished a couple times that I could rotate the camera on this one. Which, of course, you shouldn't be able to do, because it's... Well, I guess you could, actually. You could definitely... trick that, because you already have the sprites for them facing those directions.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be elegant, I guess, but you could rotate it. But I had to physically move someone a couple times to get an attack in, not because I weren't in position, but because I couldn't click right to get them to do that thing.
Get your clicking right.
I'm trying.
Yeah, one time one of my humans was behind a huge dragon. He's like, I can't even see this person. But eventually it worked out then.
My least favorite thing is the opposing turn order.
Yeah.
It's a clear design decision that I just don't agree with. I think that it makes it so that the best thing that you can do always is get the opposing team down to one health and then ignore them.
That is not what I did.
What do you mean?
Well, if you kill something, that means that the other team characters get to take their turn more often.
Really?
Because after you take a turn, and there are more than one of the opposing team, they will take a turn. There's three enemies to attack. And the next turn, you can take this guy out or not, he's going to go in the next turn. If you take him out, the enemy that was going to go the turn after goes next, and just goes immediately. And now, you take another turn, the other enemy takes a turn, you take another turn, and then that first enemy that got moved up the slot gets to take a second turn. Mm-hmm. So it's actually very defensively minded, to the point where a couple times I just went in with a smaller party. I went in with only like 4 characters instead of all 6, because your character gets to attack more, and Rook is a lot stronger with like 2 archers who can be anywhere and let Rook take his turn more often. Mm. The problem at that point is that the archers are very vulnerable, but that means that the thing that you want to do is not to kill the guy next, is to get him down to 1 health so that he can't hurt you while he takes up a turn.
Oh, he fully can.
He can, but he can do less, like, the next turn will do less damage if this guy has 1 health than if this guy is dead and the next guy goes.
You say so.
I did not figure that out. I mean, sometimes it did seem like they had extra turns, but I was just like, what the heck? I'm gonna kill you. That's as deep as that went.
Yeah. It is an interesting choice, but I think that they should have moved that sort of natural advantage-disadvantage of numbers to somewhere else. Mm. If they were going to take it out of that. Because normally, in a given round, when my entire team goes, if I have 6 characters, and the opposing team has 6 characters, then there will be 12 actions taken before my first character gets another chance. Mm. And then, if I can kill your guys, so you have 4 characters, then I'm only 10 actions away from my first character going again. In most tactical games, which this is not. In this game, there's still 12 actions before your character gets to go. It's just that they get to go more often. So, yeah, that's not my favorite.
News to me.
It's cool. I'm happy that you could see that.
That wasn't your experience at all?
No, I... Well...
So the reason they're going to do less damage to you is because they can only do 1 point of damage to you if their health is 1, under any circumstance.
Gotcha.
The amount of damage that you do is the amount of health that you have minus the amount of armor that your opponent has.
Huh.
What? Okay. This is just so
much. Yeah, I'm glad that you got a better picture of the combat than we did.
How it, like, really worked.
Yeah. That's what the deflect is, is that if the opponent has armor that is higher than your health, then every point of that adds to the percentage that you won't hit at all.
That's really interesting, because what you're saying is that health and attack are directly linked.
Uh-huh.
That means that you can't have a glass cannon in this game.
Correct. A little bit. If you have a character who had, like, 20 health and 1 armor, that character will be very easy to damage.
Still hard to kill, though. There were several instances in which someone went after one of my characters and just railed on their health solely, just left their armor completely alone, which is why I was very sad to find out that the Mender's power is to help armor and not health, because that's...
Yeah, there's no way to get health back.
Yeah. But, like, even if they had 1 armor and they had 20 health, that's still a bunch to soak hits in. Glass Cannon would be someone who can deal out a lot of damage, but can't take any. Like, an archer, for instance. If somebody with really powerful ranged attacks, or attacks at all, like a berserker, can do a bunch of damage, but if you get hit, like, 2 times and you're dead, that would be a Glass Cannon.
Yeah, I feel like the archer should have had more health.
Or more damage.
Well, but that's the only way to have more damage, is to have more health.
It seems like they capped really low, too. Like, like 9 or something.
Yeah.
My other misgivings about this game is that the gender disparity is so weird. Like, there aren't any female Varl at all.
I was going to say that. Thank you for saying that. I was so curious to see what they would look like, too.
Right? They'd be so cool. Like, big with horns. It's not that hard. Come on.
Yeah.
I can kind of see the reasoning of being like, okay, it's important to the story that Varl can't reproduce or whatever. But
is that true?
Yeah.
Varl can't reproduce?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
That every single Varl was made by a god. And so now that the gods are dead, there are no more Varls that can be made.
But still, you still could add women.
I didn't know that at all.
Yep.
I mean, maybe they had women, but there was like a curse or something. Like, yeah, you didn't have to eliminate the, like, female.
Plenty of women can't reproduce. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And also, none of the fighters, none of the, like, sword or axe wielders or shield wielders were women. Mm-hmm. Like, only archers could be women. That was annoying. Also, absolutely no people of color in this game. Which, again, you could justify, oh, it's a Norse story, but also you have Varl who have big horns. There's no reason you can't have people of color in this game.
Thanks, it's fantasy.
It's fantasy. It's high fantasy. Come on.
Yes. Yeah. What was your most favorite part of this game?
Most favorite. My most favorite is part.
Your mostest favorite?
It would have had to be winning battles.
Winning?
Which I thought...
Winning was pretty good. Just like winning. I felt real good.
I usually just really appreciate the story and, like, visual stuff, but I found myself getting frustrated when I wasn't battling. I'm like, okay, enough with the, like, the drama and the traveling. And every time
let me hit somebody.
Every time a banner popped up, I'm like, I just want to fight. But it was really great. Once I switched from normal to easy and started winning, I was like, yes. I just couldn't wait till I could fight again.
Yeah.
Fighting is fun in this. Getting a really big hit in.
Yeah. So and good. Just like the way that you hit somebody and they're like, ugh, and yeah.
Yes, that'll teach you. Yeah. I do wish that the like stacking thing had worked better more. Like when you get a bunch of enemies in the line, if you hit one in the front, then it'll like bump into each other.
Yeah.
But that was only ever for like 1 point of damage, which adds up after a while, but it's so rare to get them in a line and to get in that hit. Mm-hmm. That's not the thing that I like. What's the thing that I asked? The combat is really fun, but I think the things that I liked the most were always the Godstones.
Yeah.
Mostly because they were almost always little bright spots in these people's lives, right? It's a moment of rest. It's a moment of reflection. It's a chance to have a nice little, like, drinking party. There was one instance where it was, like, a fish god of some kind, and there were all these brightly colored scales in the snow, mm-hmm. and there was the option to, like, stay and maybe waste some rations, but let the people find all of these scales, which boosted morale a bunch and got a really cool chain shirt out of it. And that's what I put Rook in. Mm. I forget what it did, but it was really, really handy.
I don't think I let them stay. I was like, well, supplies, come on.
Yeah. Also, why you didn't run out of supplies, obviously. So, whenever the little vignettes came up, those were my favorite.
I liked that as well. I really liked that waiting for the mender, and yeah. I thought that that was really well done. Of, well, they're not here. What do? I guess I'm just going to rest. So not here.
Yeah.
What do? And then you leave, and your mender guy's like, come on, you gotta, it's going to come. I know it. And it's like, it's been a long time, actually. And then as soon as you find Juno, she's like, yeah, sorry, we couldn't make it. There was like this massive canyon in the ground.
Yeah.
Turns out, can't get there. Also, I'm leaving again, so, wait.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay.
Poor kid.
Yeah.
One thing that actually scared me was, I think it was the singer, what is it?
Bellor? The stone singer?
Stone singer Bellor. It was one of those two where it would just yell and just take everybody's, like, a point of health or armor or something.
Yeah, Bellor would do that.
I don't know if I was just, back. Like, super relaxed or something, but it did that one time, and I was like, yeah, I hate
that. That was a weighty fight. That was a scary fight, yeah.
Yeah.
Even on easy, it was like, oh, geez, I don't know about this.
I wish that the items... I just wish that there were a little bit more point of contact between the things that interact with each other. Mm-hmm. I never got to the point where I felt like things were behaving the way they told me they did.
Yeah, I wish that this would have been a little bit more weight on the art side. But I wish that you could have seen the equipment that you'd given your warriors in combat. I wish that you could have seen the like metal bracers that gave more strength. Or that these things had visual aspects on their characters. And then you could better connect. This guy's doing better because I put those bracers on. Or
they did a little bit. In the stats list on the left-hand side, there's your stats. And right next to that is a little icon. Mm. And that icon is the reason it has those stats. You can hover over it, including good morale. Good morale will give you 2 extra points of willpower.
Hey.
So I was like, hey, why does that say 10 out of 8? And why? What's that little face next to it? And mouse over. Oh, hey, plus 2 points for good morale.
Okay, that's fair. Maybe that's my fault for not, never, ever, ever looking at that corner of the
Yeah.
That's fair. I can cop to being bad at games. I will do that.
So I feel like we're wrapping up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Did you like this game?
Yeah.
Yes. Usually when I think about whether or not I liked a game, I think, would I play it again? I would not play this again, I don't think. I might play... Weirdly, I think I would play the combat of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I would play it straight through from the beginning to the end. Even though I am interested in the different branches that it would have, I'm just not prepared to make that journey, that miserable trek across the wastes.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I found it just really tiring to play.
It's a
wearying game. It grinds down on you a little bit,
which is appropriate.
That's what it set out to do.
Yeah, I appreciated it on the tin. What it was, and I would play another strategy game. Mm-hmm. But like you, I probably wouldn't be like, "Oh, let's play Banner Saga today."
Would you play Banner Saga too?
I Yeah, I think I would play it and just see how it was going. And then if I found myself getting too depressed, I probably would stop.
Yeah, let your feelings guide you. Yeah, I liked it. It's just tiring. Yeah. Would you make anything like this?
Probably not tonally. I don't think I have that in me. But I am interested in making the type of game. Having the visual novel next to the strategy game, or the visual novel next to that, or that, like, sort of hierarchy of sort of storytelling that you were talking about really worked for me.
Yeah.
So I would probably, yeah.
Hey, can you imagine working on a game this dire?
No, thank you.
Like, every weekday for the next year and a half, I need you to think about why this is awful for everyone involved. I need,
can you make it worse?
Can you draw the desperation a little deeper in these eyes? All right, our heroes are going to get to a new town. What's wrong with this town? Why is it a bad town?
Yeah. I don't think I would enjoy making a game like this. But I actually had a thought. If I were to make one like this, I don't know if there's a game like this, but the bad guys, like the Dredge, would be like aliens that have finally come to Earth. And then the reason why it's so terrible is because all the bad decisions that humans make just out of like stupidity. Like, think of Independence Day or any other movie where the government makes like horrible decisions because they don't want to listen to the one person who actually has a good head on their shoulders. I think it would kind of be like that. Like, we are our own like saboteurs. Mm. That's what that would kind of be like.
Yeah, I really like the format, and I would wonder what it would be like in a ultra low stakes kind of narrative.
Hmm.
Just a road trip, and just have it be
Banner Saga coffee shop AU.
Yeah. Okay.
Listen, I'm into it.
Yeah, we're like, you know, you have to figure out how long you can go before you have to stop for more gas or to use a bathroom or whatever. And you have these conversations along the way, and you're progressing through, like, a person's life instead of, like, a culture's life.
You can get carjacked.
Wow, sure, maybe. Certainly you can lose your phone.
Then you have to buy a map.
Which is the same, right?
So maybe you park at a national forest, and then you're walking in the woods, there's no one around, and your phone is dead. Out of the corner of your eye, you spot him.
Yeah. I do like the idea of trying, like, these layered narratives, layered mechanics. Like, the fact that it has a whole section of, like, Oregon Trail, basically, and then a completely unrelated but in some ways connected tactical map. And I'd like to try to see how far that could get pushed, especially in something more mundane.
I still think that the strategy part of it, the, like, fights are important to it, because Where the Water Tastes Like Wine just came out. And that's basically you walking around and encountering these little short stories around America. And you have those small branching opportunities, right? But that's really the full game, as far as I know. I haven't gotten very far into it, but it really is just sort of going through these stories and reading, or like listening to them tell you these stories.
Yeah, I would want to do the combat in a way that would allow it to be more mundane. Like, if the combat itself was something clearly artificial.
Or something like Diner Dash or something, right? Like,
or, like, if it was almost an Octodad approach of use these mechanics to do wildly different things, some of which it's not at all built to handle, and maybe there's narrative weight to the fact that you're doing something you're not equipped for.
Yeah.
Or to have it adding a layer of imagination onto the mundane thing, like looking out the window and imagining somebody running alongside the car, that kind of deal. And so starting from there and then expanding to the combat to be just these ideas fighting, as like maybe have a little bit more crossover between the storytelling styles. Maybe things pop up a little bit during the combat. Maybe they have a little bit more overlap. Just to,
like, the things that you talked about come up in the combat.
Yeah, stuff like that.
That would be fun to make.
I think that'd be fun. Get really wild with it. I'm going to save the rest for the email.
Okay.
Because I wrote in an email. So I'm hoping that you guys are going to read my email.
Okay. If you would like to send us an email about this or any other game that we've covered, or will cover, send it to backlog@teacabbage.com.
So, yeah, this is sent in to backlog@teacabbage.com. This is from, if I'm saying this right, Calyx?
Calyx?
Calyx? I don't know.
Calyx?
Something like that. Anyway, they write, would you prefer Banner Saga if it further embraced the story choices, or the tactics combat, or the journey choices?
Nope.
Which, like, path thing would you prefer to see it go down?
I really like the balance they struck.
The balance?
Yeah. I think if it were any heavier in tactics, that I would get lost in it. I think if it were any stronger in any of the story mechanics that they have, I would lose interest. I only have so much reading in me, unfortunately. And I feel like if they had embraced more of the Oregon Trail stuff, that I also would have gotten bored with it.
You think it would have overstayed its welcome?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that the ration management was interesting only in the story that it helped tell, in the tone that it helped strike. As a numbers thing, I'm not interested in it at all.
Yeah. I would enjoy a version of this game that goes a lot deeper into the tactics.
Hmm.
Because I feel like there's all these things that can interact with each other in interesting ways and just never get the chance to. Hmm. Like, for instance, one of the items does a, like, plus 10% times 2 to strength, or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
That's a critical hit. Hmm. Which also, I found that out by looking it up, because I was like, okay, I'm sick of not knowing what this means. That means you have a 10% chance to do 2 times the amount of strength you would have done.
I wish that had been written better.
Yeah.
Because I would have used that a lot.
But once I found that out, I made sure I didn't use that. Because this is a game where it's much more useful to have a character, an enemy at 1 health, than to have an enemy dead.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to not rely on, or not being able to rely on the fact that my next attack was going to put them at this health or not,
right.
meant that I couldn't use that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a lot of stuff, like with Oddleaf's tile trap.
I wish that was useful at all.
I tried, and I was like, this is not doing anything.
No one ever goes into that spot once it's set, and even if they do, it does, like, 1 damage. It's just not worth it. Oddleaf, come on.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if there was, like, a wall or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a circle.
Yeah.
Really any area of effect at all.
So I would have really liked it to do a lot more things that make your earlier choices in the match echo throughout it. Like, it could be literally that when you make an action, it alters the terrain the way that the pitch cross does.
Yeah.
If that arrow trap that Oddleaf sets wasn't only useful for 1 turn, or if there was an aspect of being able to do multiple things in a turn and then having to pick between those a little bit more. I feel like that could be a lot of fun, but at every turn it feels like the mechanics are not allowed to touch each other. You can do Stonewall, and you can do these other things, but don't do them all. Just once is fine.
Yeah, that was going back to the different ways that we did combat. One of the reasons that I was diligent to make sure that I got as many, like, one-shot, one-kills as possible. Like, I was just trying to get everyone dead as quickly as possible, because early in the game, a problem that I had was getting swarmed. One character would get hit, and that would be fine, but then it would get worn down by everyone attacking in sequence. And sometimes I got lucky and they just sort of ignored the person who was at 1 health to go hit the guy who had, like, 12 health. But that's not reliable at all, which is why I was so adamant to kill as many people as quickly as possible.
Whether Alette wanted you to or not.
Yeah.
How would you have felt if it focused more on one of those features instead of trying to get the balance between them?
I thought it was fine. I agree mostly with everything that you were saying. I feel like if it was more tactic-y, that I would have been, like... it was like perfect for this being my first time playing something like this. Mm. I feel like I kept up with everything good enough.
Well, that sounds great. That's the Banner Saga by Stoic Interactive. Thanks for listening to the backlog. Feel free to rate, subscribe, tell your friends, do the thing.
Do all the things.
Next week, we'll be playing Morphblade by Tom Francis. So if you have any insights, anecdotes, or questions about that game, send them to backlog@tcabbage.com, and we will find out what that game is like. I'm a little excited for it, both because I've played this game a little bit and it's really good, and also because I'm really mad at Tom Francis for being so good at game design.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I gotta figure out how I'm gonna exist during a conversation about that.
Yeah, you just gotta look that right in the face, don't you?
Just be like, hey, here's this guy, he's just doing some amazing stuff that I should do. Why didn't I do that?
You're not Tom Francis.
Why am I not Tom Francis, though?
So join us next week for the comparison of Tom Francis to James Baxter. It'll be good.
But, like, think about how long I haven't been Tom Francis, though. I could have been Tom Francis this whole time? Or what is it you're saying to me?
No.
Talk
about it next week. Don't worry about it.
Join us next week for Morphblade on the Backbone.